the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Jared. Why are we here, Phil? Tell me immediately.
We are going to talk about the world's greatest disasters, Phil. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or good old God's fault.
Awesome. And remember, Phil, it's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rate of some of these disasters,
nope.
Is it?
Nope.
That's not true. We're just interested in finding out what went wrong in it. And be honest with yourself, Phil. If it happened on the news, I reckon you'd be interested.
I would.
What are we wanging on about this week?
The Donner Party.
In 1846, a wagon party led by George Donner began a perilous journey across the continent. A new and untested route resulted in many unexpected hardships and delays. The wagons were late reaching the Sierra Nevada, the last barrier on the route to California. Disaster awaited the 87 men, women, and children of the Donner Party.
Had you heard of the Donner Party before it was mooted for this?
I knew nothing. When you, because you suggested this, Phil, and I seem to recall you wrote that, what about the Donner Party? And I went, yeah, totally. Got home and thought, have I agreed to go to a party I know nothing about?
Yes, you thought I was like, literally inviting you to like a Donner Kebab party or something like
I
that.
I had no
idea.
Are you
coming to the Donner Party? Because like I've organised a Donner Party and if you're not going to come, I'm not going to do it.
And then after a day, I thought, I can't style this out. So I had to WhatsApp you, didn't I, and go, Phil, you know you said to me, are you coming to the Donner Party? And I said, yes. What the fuck do you mean?
The only reason I know about the Donner Party is because of The Shining.
What was the Donner Party?
They were a party of settlers in covered wagon times. They got snowbound one winter in the mountains. They had to resort to cannibalism in order to stay alive.
Disappointing that you got it from a film, because I like us to find things off on our own rather than big films.
How is that not finding out on your own?
Well, you got it from a big multi-budget film.
Yeah.
I like to just go, oh, I know
what. Or you like
to
get it
from
somewhere a bit niche, like Wikipedia.
That's right.
So, Phil, the Donner Party, what was it?
It was a group of American pioneers who set out for California in a wagon train in May 1846, but it all went wrong.
When did it all go wrong, Phil?
The winter of 1846 and into early 1847.
It's quite nice to be doing this. It's happened around this sort of time.
Yes, I suppose. Winter warmer.
A winter warmer. How many people died in this winter warmer?
About 41.
Oh, low death toll.
Lowish death toll in the great scheme of things, but very, very horrific.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Let's find out just how horrific it was. What was the Donner Party?
To understand this, we need a little background information. So during the 1840s, the United States saw a dramatic increase in pioneers. So, you know, people who left their homes in the east to settle in the kind of Oregon Territory and California in the west.
Wagon train.
Exactly.
Just a little further out west.
Some saw California as a place where they would be able to live freely in a fully Catholic culture, which we all know is very free.
Very free.
But many were inspired by the idea of something called manifest destiny, which is a philosophy which asserted that the land between the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans, i.e. America, belonged to European Americans, and they should settle it.
So it's one of those philosophies which is like, the people that we are and the place that we are is the best people in the best place, right?
Irrespective of the people that were there before.
Yeah, that's right. So we've had a look into it and it turns out I'm the best.
Yes. So there was a bit of that.
Right. Okay.
But also, to be fair, there was a lot of people who just thought, we can get rich by going west. We can make our fortune, make our living. This is the best place for us to be.
But
so a mixture of
But they thought God wanted them to do it.
Some did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, some did. Now, remember this, Phil.
Right.
Remember this. This is the 1840s. You're educated. You will know this. We got no trains. We got no planes.
No.
We got no cars.
No.
People used horses and
wagons.
So most wagon trains followed a fairly standard route. Worked out it's about 15 miles a day on this route, and that journey took between 4 and 6 months.
Okay, so where did they start from, sorry?
The east.
Okay.
Near Chicago, I think.
So they start in Chicago.
So around about.
You pack up a wagon, you get your mates together, and you just sort of basically piss off to California.
Yeah, it took about 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
And they got kind of a fairly standard route, because a lot of people were doing this.
Well-travelled, like the Silk Road or something like that, I suppose.
Yeah, easy to negotiate for wagons, which of course is important, because what you don't want to be doing on a wagon train is going off-route and trying something a bit different that hasn't been tested, because things could go wrong.
Stick to the path, definitely.
So that is my basic background there, Phil. But I am aware that there is a chap called Lansford W. Hastings that's quite important to this story.
Lansford W. Hastings.
It's a great name.
I imagine he had a big moustache.
Oh, definitely.
So, Lansford W. Hastings was an early settler in the West. Okay, he published a book called The Emigrant's Guide to Oregon and California. In it, he described a direct and shorter route to the West that he said would save travellers around 350 miles.
That's a lot.
There was just one problem, Phil.
Oh.
Lansford W. Hastings had never actually tested this route. He made it up. He just had a bash. I reckon, mate, I reckon he turned left, left again. There's a petrol station. I reckon you keep going. You save you 16 days. That's what he said.
Naughty man.
He had never tested the route, and some of the information in the book was basically falsified to make it sound more appealing. In short, he was a charlatan, and the route probably wasn't a good one to take. So, a little bit like some of the things we've talked about, this is the kernel of everything fucking up, right?
Yes, Lanford W. Hastings suggesting, hey guys, I've got another route.
Now, one of the most difficult parts of the journey to California was the last 100 miles across the Sierra Nevada. Because of their height, Phil, and the proximity to the Pacific Ocean, they receive more snow than most other ranges in North America. Mm. To get across this peaky, snowy bastard, right, it was crucial, if you had a wagon train, that they don't get bogged down in mud created by spring rains or by massive snowdrifts in the mountains from September onwards, right? Yeah. So I think you know where this is going.
Yeah.
Basically,
they need to get there and over it before the weather sets in for the winter.
That's right. You've got a small window, you've got some horses, and you've got, like, an old wagon with a bit of rawhide, I guess, over the top, which you've packed with children, right? And biltong. That's all you got in there is children and biltong. It's not a tank, right?
No.
So you've got a small window to get it through that quite dangerous mountain range.
Mm.
What you don't want to be doing is relying on a pamphlet that you've bought from some bastard with a big handlebar moustache, right? You want to know where you're going,
yes.
Right? You want to have supplies and know what time to go, otherwise you're going to get bogged down in mud and rain and all sorts of shit.
But that's also where the concept of a wagon train comes in, because if you're on a wagon train, there's loads of you all together, and then you can provide mutual assistance.
Teamwork.
Yeah, I mean, if this journey takes 6 months, the more people on the wagon train, the more you can divide duties, and it's safer, isn't it?
Yep.
So that's important at all.
I bet it was quite a lot of fun, the wagon train, if you weren't being attacked by Indians.
Mm.
You know, because you've got mates, everyone's having a nice time.
Sing-alongs,
a big jugs of, I don't know, mead.
They haven't dropped the nuclear bombs in the desert, so you're not going to die 50 years later
exactly.
of your radiation poisoning and cancer.
Yeah, there's no. It's early in the gestation of America, so there's no strip malls.
Yeah, John Wayne's always going to look after you.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagine he was up at the front, hanging off the bottom of a horse. That's all he ever did, wasn't he, John Wayne? Hang off the bottom of a horse. Get on the top, John Wayne, it's easier. I like to hang off the bottom. Yes, so, because there's loads of you that are all taking this big, long journey, there is strength in numbers, safety in numbers. Mm. Get a shitload of you together.
Mm.
One or two of you are going to die along the way. Mm. Some of you are going to have illicit sexual intercourse and have children that you didn't want on the wagon train.
That's life.
But that's life. Life continues on the wagon train, right? It took about 6 months. So the same sort of amount of time it takes for a middle-class kid from Surrey to do, say, Malaysia, Vietnam, and then fucking go on about it for the rest of his life about how Chang beer had a different percentage no matter where you bought it from. So that's where we start this particular story. Right, in April and early May of 1846... Trying to think of what else was happening in 1846.
No idea.
We've got a couple of years till the Ripper.
Victoria had been on the throne 9 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Victoria. So she was probably just about getting it on with Albert around that time, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, so around the sort of time that Victoria and Albert were having some pretty intense sexual intercourse.
Bumming.
Bumming? Did you just say bumming about one of our previous queens? In April and early May of 1846, when over 500 wagons, that's a lot of wagons.
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine that, quite beautiful, 500 wagons.
They're quite impressive when you see one.
Yeah, well, 500 horses.
Yeah.
How many horses pull a wagon?
Don't know.
I mean, a few. I bet it's four.
Three
horses.
Or four, isn't
yeah,
it? You see them in
horses.
The films.
I mean, we're talking a good thousands and thousands of horses.
Yeah.
You'd be fairly sure that you were safe.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's shitloads of you. Mm. Like, what can go wrong? We're all here. And it's not like you're leaving fucking San Francisco in 1992, is it? You're not like waving goodbye. You know, you're going from one shithole to another shithole. Not like you're going, oh, where will we bathe? You're going to bathe in the spring like you always do, right? It's just that we're going to be travelling. Anyway,
I might be dissing Victorian America, but I've seen Far and Away, and I don't think I am. It is Victorian.
It is, but obviously it's not to them, because they're not ruled by Victoria. But they do call it
They call it the Victorian.
Yeah, but it's just weird, isn't it? Because it's not that they weren't part of the Commonwealth, or in that case, that time, the Empire. So they weren't ruled by Victoria. But even Americans sometimes call that
Sometimes
they call it the 19th century.
Anyway, So in April and early May of 1846, over 500 wagons started to head west from Independence, Missouri.
Ah, not Chicago, as I said.
Yes, not Chicago. Where's Independence?
Dunno, Missouri.
Missouri. Within this group, there were two families headed respectively by George Donner and James F. Reed.
James F. Reed.
Right. They're the two patriarchs of the two families, right? Now, these two people are critical. They're critical, Phil. Mm-hmm. There's a reason this episode is called the Donner Party and not the James F. Reed Party. Okay, so let's look at them in turn. Do you want to do George Donner?
Yes. George Donner was a successful 62-year-old farmer who had migrated five times before settling in Illinois. Obviously, the chap's adventurous. Yep. So he decided to make one last trip to California.
Oh, has he been there before then?
No, it seems to be. He's an explorer. He's a Victorian American Bear Grylls.
Yeah, he's a haggard old American prospectory big hat, probably.
Yeah.
Probably treats his women disgracefully.
So on this trip, George Donner was travelling with his 44-year-old wife, Tamsin, and their three daughters, aged between 3 and 6.
Young children.
Young children. He also had with him his two daughters from a previous marriage. So dirty George. In addition to this, George was also joined by his younger brother and their family. And also they had with them, now this is quite important, they had with them six people known as Teamsters.
Right.
Teamsters were essentially there to drive the wagons, look after the animals. They were hired in people, so they weren't necessarily friends or family. I suppose kind of like Sherpas.
Oh, okay.
I saw a friend on Facebook called Fran Kisling, who's a very funny lady.
Oh, yes,
she doesn't
Fran,
want to stand
yes.
up. And she put on as a status, is it just me or do Sherpas not get the respect due? And I totally agree.
Yeah, if I was a Sherpa, I would be pissing mad, because now you can go up Everest, right? If you do the right time of year and you have the right equipment and you have like a team, you can go up Everest, right? It's not a thing anymore. Like, you could meet someone and go, I'll go up Everest, and you're like, all right, wicked, thanks Terry, right? So now they have to do ever more stupid things to make it like be the first ever. So they go up without oxygen, they go out without shoes, they go up wearing a cape. I'm going to go up carrying a bath, right?
They deserve what comes to them, don't
they? I think that, like, what they mean is, the Sherpas are going to take me up Everest with a bath. And when those Sherpas see him come in, I bet they're like, oh, wicked. Here's another six who are going to die on our mountain. Wicked. Another 12 who are going to die on our mountain that we're going to have to take up and down. The Sherpas totally don't get any respect.
I've got friends who did Kilimanjaro.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's the wanker's mountain, isn't it? And
welcome to Wanker's Mountain.
Machu Picchu and Kilimanjaro. They are the wanker's destinations.
There is nobody. At this moment, there is nobody in Machu Picchu who is not a wanker. Not a single person. There is not a single person in Machu Picchu who hasn't bought some wooden beads, right? I have never met anybody who's been to Machu Picchu who wasn't a wanker. It's like, that's what Machu Picchu's magic power is. You might be able to go there not being a wanker. You're coming home a wanker.
Hey, they might as well just rename it. You might as well go into Travel Finders and say, can I book a 3-week vacation on the Wanker's Pilgrimage?
I want a Wanker's holiday. Certainly, sir.
No, but anyway, so I've got friends who went up Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
And you can't go up that on your own. You have to have... Yeah. You have to be escorted with Sherpas. And they were saying, oh, yeah, no, it's really hard, yeah. We did all of this, really hard. And then, you know, end of the day, you get there, and when the Sherpas have laid out your tents and got all your food ready, you're knackered.
So, yes, give more respect to the Sherpas and stop going up Everest, for God's sake. How many corpses do there need to be on that mountain?
No, there's documentaries about them, aren't there?
Yeah, just stop going up it.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go up there, die, and be known as Yellow Boots.
Yes, exactly, like, you know? You're a marker.
Yeah.
You're a marker on the mountain. You've fucking frostbitten fingers in an arrow shape. Like, people going, oh, that's the way at base camp, look. That fat fuck died on the mountain 20 years ago, pointing to where he wanted to get to, but he couldn't because he was too fat. Right, so that was Richard Donner.
I watched
Not
film.
Richard Donner, he made Superman. that was George Donner. Who was his mate, James F. Reed?
Ah, James F. Reed was a 45-year-old native of present-day Northern Ireland.
How are you?
But he'd settled in Illinois.
Illinois.
In 1831. Now, he was keen to seek his fortune in California. He was
prospecting.
Oh, we're back to John DeLorean. He was keen to seek his fortune in California, and he was accompanied on this trip by his wife, Margaret.
I like Margaret.
His stepdaughter. Don't know her name. Daughter and two sons.
They're all fucking about, aren't
they? Oh, loads of kids shagging around all the place. He was also joined by his 70-year-old mother-in-law, which I imagine he was chuffed to bits with.
Imagine taking your 70-year-old mother-in-law across country on a trolley.
Yes, and also imagine that she was in the advanced stages of consumption and died about 3 weeks after they set off on the journey.
Every cloud.
Yeah. It's all right, though, because they buried her by the side of the trail and carried on.
You don't know what she was like. She might have been awful.
I love
that. She might have been a fabulous woman and a big loss. It would be great if you had, like, a proper 70-year-old matriarch, really cool old woman.
Nowadays, though, if
coughing up blood and not giving a fuck about it. That's just a bit of blood. We need more of that.
You do. We've got a wimpy generation.
We've got a wimpy generation, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's our generation was a wimpy generation, but that's because we ate a lot of hamburgers. This is a wimpy.
Now that, ladies and gentlemen, was a good joke. I think it's true. I think that our generation, Generation X, people thought we were wimpy, but we were the George Bush of, like, despotic presidents. It's like, yeah, you thought George Bush was a bad president. That's only because you couldn't conceive of Donald Trump, right? You might have thought Generation X was wimpy, but millennials, fucking hell. Jesus Christ. The only way I would use millennials in any kind of crisis situation is as a bridge.
And that, I think, is already going to be my quote of 2019. And we're only on the 3rd of, or whatever it is, January.
Whatever the fuck it is. So basically, James F. Reed and Richard Donner, the man who made Superman, have got shitloads of family with them.
Mm. So he buried his mother-in-law by the trail. Now, nowadays, if you set off on something and one of your family died, the whole trail would be cancelled. You'd be into insurance policies to get the money back. Things have changed. Funeral. They just buried her by the side of the trail somewhere. Yeah. Carried on.
I mean, if you're driving up to Scotland or something and your mother-in-law dies on the A1, you don't just bury her by the Angel of North, do you?
But what a lovely headstone. Right, so they buried his mother-in-law by the side of the trail. But in addition to all of this, James F. Reed was seeking financial security. He was hoping that the California climate would also help with his wife, who had long been suffering from ill health.
Now then, Reed and Donna were not close friends. They weren't mates.
Mm.
Okay, in fact, there's no evidence they even knew each other. No evidence, Phil. They didn't even know each other.
Wow. I
mean. But within like a week of leaving Independence, Missouri, the Reeds and the Donners, they joined up with a group of about 50 wagons, nominally led by William H. Russell.
Oh, I love how they've all got single-letter middle names.
I want to be Phil J. Gerard.
Yeah.
By June the 16th, the group had travelled 450 miles. They'd been delayed a bit by rain, but the trip so far was largely uneventful, apart from the death of the mother-in-law.
Buried by the road.
In the great scheme of things, things are going all right. And this is where we now go back to the chap who wrote that frickin' crappy pamphlet book about a shorter route, horrific old Lansford W. Hastings.
Now, to promote his new route, Lansford W. Hastings sent riders out to deliver letters to the travelling wagon trains.
Clever. He flyered them as they were going.
Essentially, yeah. I wonder if that's annoying as it is in the Edinburgh Fringe.
I imagine it is. Mm. Because in the Edinburgh Fringe, you haven't just travelled 450 miles and buried your mother-in-law. Imagine somebody like that saying, come to my show. as you're putting the last sod of earth against their gravestone.
Is it challenging? Does it tell you about your life?
I do hope it's challenging.
Oh, is it an hour of what happened when you were sectioned? Oh, fuck off.
Come and learn how my dad died. The Edinburgh Fringe.
Anyway, on July the 12th, the Reeds and the Donners, they were flyered. Yep. And give them one of these letters. Now, within them, old Lansford W. Hastings warned these people that they could expect opposition from Mexican authorities in California. All them Mexicans.
Yeah.
And advised them, therefore, to band together in large groups.
Right.
So sort of stay together in large groups.
Good advice.
Yeah, fair enough. That's the drawing them in.
Right.
Say, oh, yeah, he's easy. He knows what he's talking about, this bloke. Then he claimed to have worked out a better road to California. And said that if they took it, he would be waiting at a place called Fort Bridger, Wyoming, to guide them along his new route, which became known as the Hastings Cutoff. On July the 20th, at the Little Sandy River, most of the wagon train opted to follow the established trail.
I think there is a lesson for this in life, right? In some cases, you know, be a hipster. You know, go to a temple that's not in the Lonely Planet. But if it's life and death, follow the frickin' trail. You know what I mean? Go the way that Waze tells you.
I mean, it's already an adventure, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Why do you need to... I get it. You want to take time off, but yeah, it's but a risky business.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So most of these people said, well, no, they took Phil Gerard's advice and said, no, we're going to stick with the established part. But a smaller group.
Yep.
Opted to head for this Fort Bridger where old Lansford said it'd be. And to do that, they needed a leader. Now, obviously, we've mentioned these guys, James Reed and George Donner, both suitable candidates.
Yep.
But the group decided to vote George Donner in, and he was given the role. I think they said he was more of a... I think James Reed had rubbed people up the wrong way a little bit.
Really?
I think he was a little bit acerbic, whereas George Donner...
Avuncular.
Avuncular. Mm. Yeah, and he hadn't buried his mother-in-law by the side of the road.
So probably
on.
In a better mood.
Mm.
Yeah, or a worse mood, depending on what his family situation was like.
So, you've got George Donner in charge. The Donner Party reached Fort Bridger on July the 28th. So that is about 10 days after they were handed this leaflet saying, come here. However, upon their arrival, what a surprise, there was no sign of Lansford W. Hastings.
He left a post-it note.
Yep.
I'm not here.
The note indicated that Hastings had left with another group and that later travellers should just follow and catch up.
How were they going to follow?
God, I don't know. I think, if I remember rightly, he was going to leave notes on trees as
just
he went.
Just leaving post-it notes on trees?
I think so.
Wow.
So hopefully he brought some paper and tacks with him.
Yeah, definitely.
And a small hammer.
Just follow the trail of dead, isn't it, I imagine? Follow the trail of dead mother-in-laws. Towards the west.
Surprisingly, however, most of the party were satisfied with this. So what they decided to do was rest for a few days at the place, making repairs to their wagons and you know, preparing for the rest of the journey, which they thought was going to take about 7 weeks. So on July the 31st, so that's about 3 days after they got to Fort Bridger, they left Fort Bridger. Now, this group now numbered 74 people in 20 wagons. And, you know, for the first week, they made fairly good progress, 10, 12 miles a day, a little bit slower than normal, but by and large.
And they're going through nice countryside, I should have thought.
Yeah, it'd be like, oh, look at that. Look at that. Look at that tree. Mm. Look at that lake. Yeah, look at that mother-in-law's hands coming out from the dusty trail.
Yeah. However, within days, they found the route much more difficult than they'd been led to believe.
Oh, dear.
And the drivers were forced to lock the wheels of their wagon to prevent them from rolling down steep inclines.
So in other words, it just brakes.
It's getting rocky.
Yeah.
Right? It's getting steep. It's getting weird. Because, you know, when you get lost and there's a point between we are fucked and this doesn't seem right. Like, I haven't seen a petrol station for a while. I am pretty sure it shouldn't be nighttime. That sort of thing, right? That's where they are now. I imagine they're getting a little bit nervous. It's a bit more rocky than they thought it was going to be, right? Old Lansford W. Hastings, his post-it notes are gone. they haven't seen a post-it note for miles, right? He'd gone ahead. He clearly realised this stage that he'd royally screwed up his route. So he left the Donner Party notes on trees advising them not to take his route as it was virtually impossible. Imagine seeing one of those. You haven't seen a post-it note for ages. Oh, there's one. Oh, at last. You see the little yellow square. You get close and it says, "Dear Donner Party, you're fucked, I'm fucked, everything's fucked."
He is essentially saying, I got this wrong. You're a bit deep.
I kind of made it up. Guys, I made it up, and now I'm gone.
Suppose at least he had the heart to tell them.
Exactly. Why would you tell them?
Guys, I'm sorry.
Wouldn't you just run away with that noise, that sound effect they use in cartoons when someone's about to run?
That's right. Okay, so he's gone. But they carried on. On August the 6th, the party found a letter from Hastings advising them that his route was more difficult than he had thought and to stop until he could show them an alternative route.
So that would be Hastings' alternative route, yep. Yeah, to his original alternative route that turned out to be bullshit.
Yes, this is a good point, yes. I bet the alternative route looked quite a lot like the original route. Hastings' note troubled the emigrants. I bet it freaking did. Yeah. To return to Fort Bridger to pick up the established route would have meant wasting several days. So they decided to wait for Hastings.
Oh, dear.
After 8 days, when Hastings has still not arrived.
He's still not arrived.
Why did they think he was coming? I mean, you'd obviously think he was a charlatan at this point. I know it's easy in hindsight, but you would think, this guy's... I mean, if you went to Kuala Lumpur and on the fifth day your tour guide hadn't turned up, you'd go, ah, Thompson, the fuck to see. So after 8 days, Hastings hadn't arrived, and they sent a message up the canyon to find him. The messenger returned several days later with instructions from Hastings, so they did find him, to follow another trail through the Wasatch Mountains.
Some mountains.
Go through the Wasatch Mountains, mate. And the emigrants complied.
Oh.
I guess, you know, what are they going to do?
Well, they're up shit creek.
It's not like they have a second opinion. They can't check Google Maps, come there and go, oh, I reckon we can do it this way. It's like, you've got to have someone to tell you the way, haven't you, right? Okay, the alternative route, however, turned out to be even worse.
I mean, I'm not laughing, but
it is bad,
it's
isn't
ridiculous.
It? They're being fucked by this guy. Yeah. I hope something horrible happened to this guy. Okay, the emigrants had to carve a fresh road through thick trees and boulder-strewn ground. By now, they were only travelling about a mile and a half a day.
They should be doing about 15.
Shit, mile and a half a day.
That's nothing.
That's nothing, is it? Absolutely nothing.
That's nothing.
That's like hit the shops.
I could piss that far.
You could piss that far. Well, not with your prostate. You could dribble that far. By August the 20th, they reached a point in the mountains where they could look down and see the Great Salt Lake City in Utah.
Ooh.
It took almost another 2 weeks to travel out of the Wasatch Mountains, and one of the party died of tuberculosis.
One down.
Two down.
Two down, yes.
Two down.
Strangely enough, Phil, some of the party began to argue.
That is strange.
Yeah. And doubts were expressed about the wisdom of those who had chosen this route, in particular, James Reed.
Oh, it was him who chose it.
He was quite influential in choosing this route, yeah.
Okay.
And of course, now food and supplies are beginning to run out,
yeah.
Particularly for some of the less affluent families, because don't forget, a lot of people brought what supplies they had with them, yeah. So the richer you are, the more you had. So yeah. The less affluent families are starting to suffer a bit more. But eventually, the Donner Party made it through the Wasatch Mountains and arrived at the Great Salt Lake. The Hastings route had cost them 18 valuable days. Now, you think, okay, well, we lost two people ultimately, one on this route, but we're here.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the difficulties were only just beginning.
Yeah, because this gets pretty bad, right? I think, yeah.
In the heat of the day, the moisture underneath the salt crust rose to the surface and turned the soil into a kind of gummy mess. This meant that the wheels on the wagon sank into it, and in some cases, right up to their hubs. So right to the top of the wheels.
So this is like sticky silt, crappy, desert-y mulch, right?
Horrible. Yeah. So the days were blisteringly hot and the nights were freezing cold, you know, as it is in deserts.
Yeah.
Several of the group saw visions of lakes and wagon trains that weren't there. After 3 days, their water was completely gone. Some of the animals were so weak that they were just left tied to wagons that they couldn't get out of the mush and abandoned.
Nice.
Nine of James Reed's 10 ox broke free, and crazed with thirst, they bolted off into the desert and were never seen again.
But they made it back. They're not idiots, are they, animals? They went back to Fort Bragg, the fuck it was.
Many other families, cattle and horses, had also just gone missing.
It's
starting to fall apart. Yeah. The rigours of the journey resulted in just irreparable damage at this point to some of the wagons. But, you know, for all of that, apart from one episode of TB and the old mother-in-law buried back by the side of the road, no human lives have been lost.
But it is fragmenting.
It's falling apart, yeah.
Okay. None of the party at this point had any remaining faith in the Hastings cutoff. I mean, not before time. Okay. despite their now near hatred of Hastings, I bet they frickin' hated him, right? They had no choice but to follow his tracks, right? On September the 26th, 2 months after embarking on the cutoff, the Donner Party rejoined the traditional trail along a stream that became known as the Humboldt River. The shortcut had probably delayed them by a month, but they're back on the trail. Mm. So you'd think now everything was kind of okay. They're cursed. This is another case of these people being cursed. Yeah. What happened when they rejoined the trail, Philip Lucas?
Well, back on the trail, things looked to be going better. The group met some Native Americans who joined them for a couple of days, but then stole or shot several oxen and horses.
Well, you know, I mean, you have genocided their country, so...
Well, we don't know the specifics of this party. That strikes me as a bit unfair, but well, I suppose there's a bigger picture, isn't
there? I meant Americans generally.
Well, yeah, I suppose there's a bigger picture.
I'm not saying the Donner Party did some genocide. To be fair, it doesn't seem like they've got the time.
Well, anyway, whose ever fault it was and whatever naughtiness went on, we're now well into October. Right. And the Donner Party split off to make better time. So Donner went off in one group.
Yep.
And old James Reed went off in another.
Right.
It was then that two wagons in James Reed's group became tangled. And for this reason, some bloke angrily beat one of James Reed's hired oxen.
Right.
Reed then stabbed him to death.
Wow.
And from this, he was banished from that group.
So they're tense.
Yeah. Reed's off. They're tense.
They're tense. Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's getting tense. Fair enough.
So the trials that the Donner Party had so far endured resulted in these splintered groups, everyone looking out for themselves, distrustful of others.
Yep.
Now, another important thing is that grass was becoming scarce at this time of year. And of course, so the animals not being able to eat grass was steadily weakening. So to relieve the load of the animals, everyone was expected to walk. An elderly man was told that he had to walk or die.
We need a bit more of that.
Well, a few days later, that old man was left sitting next to the side of a stream. His foot was so swollen that it split open. He was never seen again.
It might have been a lucky escape, knowing what happens later on. Do you know what I mean? I think if I had to choose being left by the side of a stream...
With your foot split open.
With your foot split open, I might be blessed relief.
I suppose you're right. Anyway, Reed then caught up with the Donner Party. So he'd been exiled. James Reed had been exiled for stabbing someone to death, but he rushed off, caught up with the Donner Party.
Okay.
And then eventually the rest of the party that had banished Reed joined them too.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure how they all got along, but essentially James Reed, he's back again.
All right.
He's bad. But unfortunately, the bad luck continued.
Native Americans, they ran amok within the party, just like in films. They chased away the cattle, they stole and shot horses. And at this point, the party had nearly lost about 100 oxen and cattle.
Wow, that's
and
a
their
lot.
Rations were almost completely gone, right? It's not an ideal preparation to try and get over the upcoming Sierra Nevada mountains. So the hardest bit of the journey is coming up, and they have fucked every part of their preparations for it. They're knackered, they got no animals, all the animals they have got are buggered, their wagons are fucked, they're in a real bad state. Right?
They're delayed by a month, it's now hitting into winter, the weather's
cold.
Getting worse. Oh dear. Yeah.
So, as they went, they continued to encounter multiple obstacles. On October the 16th, they reached the gateway to the Sierra Nevada on the Truckee River, which is present-day Reno, almost completely depleted of all of their supplies. Mm. So they're at the gateway, the really hard bit. But miraculously, just 3 days later, on October the 19th, one of the men the party had sent to get help returned, and he had loads of mules loaded with beef and flour and Indian guides. Now, part of me thinks this is also bad luck, because if they hadn't turned up, they might have gone, look, guys, we're fucked. Let's stay here for a bit, regroup, maybe spend the winter here. We'll carry on again in the new year or something like that. Mm. But this guy, he rocks up with beef. He got beef, he got mules, he got flour, he got Indian guides.
What's Xanadu?
Right? So they camped only for 5 days, rested their oxen for a bit, and then pushed on. The party formed smaller groups and set off for one last push over the Sierra Nevada mountains. This is when it gets tasty, Phil. Right? The Donner group was the last to travel. They left it the last.
Right.
Okay. And after a few miles of rough terrain, an axle broke on one of the Donner's wagons, and George Donner sliced his hand open whilst he was trying to repair it. At this point, it seemed like a superficial wound. But we'll see. Okay. As the rest of the parties continued to what was known as Truckee Lake, snow began to fall. With attempts to continue thwarted and realising that they were stranded, most of the groups decided to make camp by the lake in the hope the snow would soon melt and they could continue their travels.
Right, so they're all in various camps camping around Truckee Lake.
Yeah.
In their own little...
In various sort of, some people probably more sensible than other people, yeah. Other people just wanting to push on.
Yeah.
You know. The 22 people with the Donner Party, they were about 6 miles behind all these main groups.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a snow, so they couldn't see them. They were pretty much on their own, right? Mm. So as the snow continued, that party built 3 shelters from tents, quilts, buffalo robes, and brush
stuff, yeah.
Bivouacs,
to protect
themselves from the harsh conditions. Right? But by the time the parties had made those camps, they didn't have any food left.
Mm.
The ox began to die, and their carcasses began to freeze.
Mm.
Bartering at this point started between the families. You can see everyone's hungry. Everyone's getting slightly nervous at this point. One man charged another £25 for the carcass of an ox that had starved to death. I imagine so he could slit it open and get inside it, like
in Return of the Jedi.
Empire Strikes Back. $25 was normally the cost of 2 healthy oxen.
What a bastard!
He's inflating that price because he knows it's life or death, and he knows every. Everybody would want to slip into a nice warm oxen at this point. It soon dawned on all of the groups at Truckee Lake that they were snowbound for the winter. They're stuck.
This is where it's going to be.
The delays caused by taking the Hastings Cut off had meant that they had reached the Sierra Nevada mountains far too late to avoid the winter. The winter's setting in now, and they are kind of making that realisation, we're not getting any further than this. We're not going back. We're going to have to somehow make this work.
And we're not talking about a British winter here, are we? We are talking about feet and feet and metres of snow.
Yes, life at that lake was freaking miserable. Right? The cabins were cramped and filthy, and it snowed so much that people weren't able to go outside for days. Days. They're trapped inside. Their diet was just ox hide. I don't know what that tastes like. I guess it's just tough ox hide.
Not very nice. Biltong, probably.
Strips of beef. Yeah. Strips of ox hides were boiled to make a disagreeable glue-like jelly. Which... Ox and horse bones were boiled repeatedly to make soup.
Repeatedly.
Ooh. I mean, how much can you get out of an ox bone? Nothing. A little bit of marrow inside, I suppose.
Yeah.
That you're making, that's coming out in the soup. And they became so brittle that they would crumble when they were chewing them.
Ooh.
Some of the group picked apart an ox hide rug that lay in front of their fireplace and roasted it in the fire and ate it. So eating rugs. A lot of people tried to catch mice and eat mice and came into the cabins. It still seems doable, maybe, but it's getting bad.
It's getting pretty bad, yeah.
After a while, most people who were staying at the lake were pretty weak. And they were spending most of their time in bed. They're just trying to last out the winter. George Donner's brother and 3 hired men from the party died. Starting to die now. When you start seeing people, Steve's dead. Okay, now Brian's dead. George Donner's damaged hand became infected.
Of course it did.
And by the end of November, the last ox available was killed for food.
Oh.
And I imagine that would be a high watermark. You know, when you cut the last tree down on Easter Island, you'd be sort of sawing it through going, I'm not sure. By December and into January, the winter's really biting. Most of these groups are facing starvation now. A few had already died of it, and they'd started to eat the ox hides that served as their roofs.
They started to eat their roofs.
Anything that was made of anything that looks vaguely edible, they're starting to eat.
Right, even things that don't look edible.
This is in addition to twigs, bones and bark, anything they can find that you could eat.
It was at this stage that a party of 17 decided to set out and finally attempt to cross the mountain path. God only knows why. I suppose it's so bad.
That is do it or die,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah. Now, this trip became known as the Forlorn Hope.
I hope it wasn't known as that then. Come on, guys. It's Operation Forlorn Hope.
That would be my team name in The Apprentice.
Yeah, that's right. Forlorn Hope. Well, okay, so Team Forlorn Hope are setting out.
Yes. Now, by this time, the snow was 12 foot deep.
Oh,
and by the third day, most of the party was snowblind. One of the party had been lagging behind from the beginning, and his body was eventually discovered, although it was a year later.
You can't walk through 12 foot snow.
You can't. You can't even do an inch in this country.
That's right.
So needless to say, this group became increasingly lost and confused. So after 2 more days without food, one of the group, a chap called Patrick Dolan, proposed that one of them should volunteer to die in order to feed the others.
Imagine that conversation.
Wow.
Hey, guys.
I've got a great idea.
Operation Forlorn Hope. Gather round. I've got an idea. Go with it. Because it is left field. I wonder if anyone took him up on it.
Well, some people suggested a duel would be a good way of sorting this out, while another account describes an attempt to create a lottery in which to choose a member to sacrifice.
Christ!
Yeah. In the end, though, it was suggested they should just keep moving till somebody simply fell.
That seems more reasonable, and I feel that maybe that should just go unsaid. Like, if you were going to say, at some point, guys, we're going to start eating each other, I don't think then a lottery would be proposed. I mean, everybody in that group is eyeing up one member of that group, going, I don't think Terry's making it. No one needs to draw lots, because everybody knows, I don't think Terry's going to be here Thursday. Guys, we eat Thursday.
I've got the thigh. Which actually was quite successful, because within a short time, two people had died. So that was the immediate problem solved.
Double bubble.
So you got a choice, chicken or beef. I mean, I shouldn't laugh.
It's a long
horrible.
Time ago. Yeah. I think it's fine.
It's horrible.
It's a long time ago.
So as this blizzard progressed, old Patrick Dolan, the guy who proposed this wonderful idea, he began to rant deliriously, stripped off his clothes, ran into the woods. He then returned shortly afterwards and died a few hours later.
That apparently happens. Yeah, the last thing that happens in pneumonia or whatever is you get really hot, take all your clothes off.
Oh, really?
So a lot of the time when people find people who died in the woods and everything of exposure, they're always naked.
Oh. So, yeah. Well, here's karma. They ate him. So he proposed that idea and now he's getting eaten himself.
You would feel better about it, wouldn't you? Because one of the things about it is you would think, is the person I'm eating going to be all right with it? And so he's the only one they really know would be all right with it. So it would give you a little bit of carte blanche.
I suppose it would make it go down better.
Yeah.
So the next morning, the group stripped off the muscle and organs from all of the people that had died, which was now five.
Right.
Then they dried all those organs and muscles and stored them for the days ahead, taking care to ensure that nobody would have to eat his or her own relatives.
Would that bother you? Do you think you could do it? Do you think you could eat a human?
I think I could do anything if you're pushed. I'm pushed to live.
I think I could do it.
Mm.
I wonder if it being a relative would be a problem. You wouldn't want to eat somebody
you knew,
would you?
Well, I mean, I'm not a parent. I don't know what I'd feel like about eating my own child.
Well, that's a different thing, isn't it? I don't think anybody would eat their kids.
You say that.
Could you eat your mum?
That I might feel a bit weird.
I don't think you could eat. I think they've made a good decision about nobody eats anybody
they know.
I think
it's the right thing to do,
I
certainly.
I'm with them.
So they've obviously got a filing system for them.
I think it's good that they've got some rules and they're sticking to them. Because they've made a lot of errors.
Mm.
And I think that now that they are eating people, they are at least doing this with some decorum.
Tommy, don't eat your brother.
Yes, exactly.
After 3 days, only seven members of the original 17 were left.
Wow.
After several more days, 25 days since they had left Truckee Lake, they came across two members of another group. Now, those people had not eaten for 9 days and were very close to death themselves. So what did they do? Welcome them in? Say, look, we've got loads of food, we've got loads of people who died. No. They shot them because they believed that their flesh was the group's last hope of avoiding imminent death from starvation.
Oh, I've gone right off the Donner Party.
On January the 12th, the group stumbled finally into a native Indian camp, looking so deteriorated that the camp's inhabitants initially fled with fear. Wow.
I bet they look terrifying.
God, yeah.
Human meats draped all over them.
Yeah. Eventually, they were given food. Now, after a few days, one of the group members continued on to a ranch in a small farming community at the edge of the Sacramento Valley. This meant that they were able to sort out a hurriedly assembled rescue party to finally go back and get these remaining six survivors of the Donner Party on January the 17th.
Right. The first relief party of seven set off, with a second relief party led by our old friend James F. Reed.
Oh, he's back, is he?
Who'd made it to safety. They set off shortly after. On February 19th, the first party reached the lake, finding what appeared to be a deserted camp. Until, and this is good, a ghostly figure of a woman appeared from a hole in the snow. The woman's. So these are the people who have stayed at Truckee Lake.
Stayed at Truckee Lake, yeah.
The woman stared at them and asked, "Are you men from California? Or do you come from heaven?" Freaky fucking deaky, right? The relief party doled out food and small portions, concerned that it might kill them if they ate too much, because that, it kills you, right? All the cabins were buried in snow. Sodden oxhide roofs, the ones they hadn't eaten, had begun to rot, and the smell was horrific. 13 people at the camp were dead, and some of them living seemed, I mean, emotionally unstable.
No, I get that. I've got sympathy there.
I mean, they'd been starving to death in snow for quite a while. Three of the rescue party trekked to the Donners and brought back four gaunt children and three adults. George Donner's arm was so gangrenous that he could not move. I'm amazed he's still alive.
That's incredible,
isn't
it?
Because he's 65 years old. He got one arm.
Must have been a hardy bastard.
He was a hard bastard. Okay, the first relief party soon left with 23 group members. But during the party's travels back, two children were showing signs of severe illness as they had no food. The children had to eat pieces of trouser and shoelaces, and then they died anyway. God almighty.
So obviously these are they're rescuing people from all these various groups around Truckee Lake now.
So what happened is they all got to Truckee Lake, they splintered, everybody tried different means to get across Sierra Nevada, all failed, and they're trying to sort of bring back as many people as they possibly can. When the rescued party members made it to safety, one of them broke into the food stores and fatally gorged himself, ate himself to death.
Oh, poor bloke. Thought he was there.
He was like, at last, beans, and then died of bean related poisoning shortly after. The second relief party.
Oh, another one.
On March the 1st, they started. They arrived at Truckee Lake and found group members in terrible condition. And this is basically the evidence of cannibalism they found now.
Right, okay.
They found a lady called Mrs. Murphy.
Mrs. Murphy.
Who told them that her family was considering eating a Mr. Milt Elliot.
Hello!
In another camp, the rescuers saw a man carrying a human leg.
Hello!
This is horror film territory we're in now. When they made their presence known to this dude who had a human leg, he threw it into a hole in the snow that contained the mostly dismembered body of Jacob Donner.
Oh, he's the brother, I think.
He was the brother. So basically, he's like, oops, shit!
Yeah. They see me with a leg!
Inside the tent where they found them, Elizabeth Donner had been refusing to eat, although her children were being nourished by the organs of their father.
So this is George Donner's brother's family.
Wow, so they were eating their own dad.
Wow.
This is horrific. This is people basically walking into a horror film, into an encampment where there's body parts, where there's people starving to death. The second relief group evacuated 12 group members, but George Donner wasn't one of them.
Oh,
he was now too ill, and his gangrene infection had reached his shoulder. I mean, again, I'm amazed
his whole
this guy's
going.
Still there.
Yeah.
This relief effort didn't go particularly well. 2 days in, they were caught by another blizzard.
So this is the relief effort.
This
now,
is the relief being, effort oh now again, getting caught in the weather. When it cleared, one of the Donner family had died, and most of the others were too weak to travel.
Oh my God!
Those who couldn't carry on stayed at what would become known as the Starved Camp. Again, not great marketing there. Do you want to visit Starved Camp? No, I'm all right, mate.
Well, it's amazing that that's called Starved Camp with what they've just had before.
Well, yeah.
But there you go.
Yeah. As an aside, another member of the Donner Party badly burned her feet because she was so frostbitten she didn't realise she's been sleeping with them in a fire.
God.
I mean, this is just insanity.
I mean, I'm laughing at the just sheer,
I think,
unbelievable
I think that,
elements of this.
I think you are well within your right to laugh at a woman who is so badly frostbitten she doesn't know her feet are on fire. The third relief.
Oh, there's another one.
On March the 12th, getting into the spring now, the third relief party reached the Starved Camp, where a further two members had since died. The now three dead bodies had all been cannibalised.
It's becoming the norm, isn't it?
It's becoming the norm, I think. Burning your feet off in a fire, eating whoever you can find, is becoming
including
the norm.
Your dad.
The next day, they arrived at another camp where the leaders of the relief, the former group members themselves, found their children dead. One of the fathers, a chap who was called William Eddy, was informed by one of the camp members, a man called Lewis Kaysberg, I guess, that he had eaten the remains of Eddie's son.
So he told him that he'd eaten his child.
Yep.
Nice.
And Eddie swore to murder him if he ever met him in California. If I ever meet that guy, you ate my son. Fuck me, man.
William, good to see you.
After this, two more relief parties. I'd stop going.
Yeah.
After this, two more relief parties were mustered to evacuate any adults who might still be alive. But both of them had to turn back because of the bad weather. After this, no further attempts were made.
Yeah.
On April the 10th, pretty much a month
After the third relief had left Truckee Lake, a salvage party was organised to recover what they could of the Donner's belongings.
So obviously the weather had now increased. We're into spring. Things are getting better.
The belongings would be sold, and parts of the proceeds used to support the orphan Donner children. The salvage party found the tents empty except for the body of George Donner, who had died only days earlier.
God, he lasted a long time, didn't he?
A long time. He lasted long enough to see everybody he cared about be eaten by everybody else he cared about.
Bloody hell.
So that is the horror of the Donner Party. What was the aftermath, Phil? Aftermath me up.
In the Donner Party tragedy, two-thirds of the men in the party perished, while two-thirds of the women and children lived.
Oh, really?
Yeah. 41 individuals died and 46 survived. In the end, 5 had died before reaching the mountains.
Yep.
35 perished at the mountain camps or trying to cross the mountains.
Yep.
And 1 died just after reaching the valley.
The guy who ate himself to death.
Yep. Many of those who survived lost toes to frostbite.
Or fire.
The children of George Donner were all orphaned.
Yep.
The story of the tragedy quickly spread across the country. I guess it would.
Yeah.
Newspapers printed letters and diaries and accused the travellers of bad conduct, cannibalism, and even murder.
Absolutely.
You would just go, Were you there?
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Were you there?
Mm.
Were you eating roof tiles and your shoelaces? You know, I mean, because I was.
Mm. We all do it, don't we? Even now, you read something that, why didn't they do that?
It's easy in hindsight.
It's easy to be moralistic, isn't it?
It's easy in hindsight. Yeah. What a fuck up. And what a horrific thing to have to live through. And the only thing that's bad is the shooting people, right? Because those people would have died anyway. Just leave them. Leave them.
Yeah.
But don't
you know what it's like when you're hungry. But you want it now, don't you?
Do you think they were hangry? They were just... They should do a Snickers advert based on the Donner Party.
The surviving members had differing viewpoints on things. They had biases, you know, different recollections of what had actually happened. So it was never extremely clear, you know, what was true that someone was saying.
Yeah.
Now, some people surprisingly blame the power-hungry Lansford W. Hastings for the tragedy.
Because it is entirely his fault.
Yeah. While others, though, they had blamed those who had chosen to take Hastings' shortcut. After the publicity, emigration to California surprisingly fell off sharply.
I bet it did, yeah.
And Hastings' cut-off all but abandoned.
I bet.
That worries me. All but abandoned.
Do you want to go the way that everyone makes it, or do you want to go the way where everyone dies and you have to eat your own children?
But this is human life, though, Phil, because in 1848 gold was discovered near Truckee Lake, where they all died in the winter, and by 1849 more than 100,000 people had gone there in search of gold right by the streams where they'd all died.
Wow.
So
I wonder if that had made them happy, the Donner Party. You know, they were starving to death on top of gold. Yeah.
Truckee Lake, though, was renamed Donner Lake
in honour
of the group. And today, it's a popular mountain resort, easily accessible by car. Absolutely no hassle to get to.
No hassle whatsoever.
And it's been designated a National Historic Landmark.
I'd love
to go
and
visit
there.
It any day you want.
I'd love to see the
Donner
Camp.
Yeah, I would be fascinated by that,
actually. I wonder if
they've
still got that pit with all the legs in it. So, that was the absolutely horrific...
Oh my God.
...horrific story of cannibalism, murder, starvation and horror that was the Donner Party. Phil, final analysis. God's fault or our fault?
God's fault for the weather.
Yep.
Lansford W. Hastings' fault for being a charlatan with roots he'd never tried.
And, I guess, a little bit the fault of that cocky of James F. Reed.
Yeah.
Basically going, hey, guys, because we've all met that guy.
Mm.
Hey, guys. No, guys. No, it's going to be fine, guys. No, I know where I'm going, guys. Okay, guys, follow me. And I bet there were loads of people in that going, oh, why are we following James? Can we not just do the thing? Can we not just go the way everyone goes?
There's a few people very silently British going, well, why are we doing this?
This is bloody stupid. There's people gnawing on a leg going, I bloody knew this would happen.
Oh, it's an awful one, Matt. It's horrendous.
Yes.
I will say, though, that if you did enjoy listening to this podcast and you want to continue immersing yourself in this sad and harrowing tale, then you can with the Donner Party board game.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, the Donner Party dinner party, a rowdy game of frontier cannibalism.
Is this real?
This is real.
You can get the Donner Party dinner party?
Yeah, you can get this game. And as the box states, Who will avoid becoming tonight's dinner and make it off the mountain alive? And who are the suspicious scoundrels hungry for human flesh? That is sick.
I mean, that exonerates any jokes we've made
it
about the Donner Party,
doesn't
if that
it?
Exists.
We didn't make a bloody game out of it.
A fast-paced game of social deduction in which cannibals and pioneers face off in a fight for survival. A party game that's rowdy, outrageous and full of playful deception.
Ages 12 and up.
Wow.
That's disgusting.
It's a long time ago now, right, the Donner Party. I really enjoyed that one. I think that one's really great. The thing I like about it is the slow descent into madness and just that image of, like, breaking into the camp and they're all carrying body parts around.
Are
and
you
like,
from California?
You guys, have you been sent from heaven?
What a freaky, deaky one. Like, a proper horror film at the
end
there.
Mad.
So, that was the end of the Donner Party episode of Crash Bang Wallop. Hope you enjoyed it.
It makes Alive, you know, that one's on the mountain. It makes that look like an episode of Andy Pandy.
It does make Alive look pretty vanilla, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because Alive, where the football team crashes in the Andes and eventually have to eat each other, it's all very... dare I say it, middle class. Right, they're nice people, they crash on a mountain, they're pushed into difficult decisions, and they do it, and they do it with sort of respect for the dares and all that sort of stuff. But this is a fucking free-for-all. Oh. This is madness. This is people getting shot and eaten, cut up, dried. Do you know what I mean? Eating your parents, children being eaten. This is like complete madness. And I'm not saying it's because they're American. But I do think it's, I think of tales of sort of cannibalism for survival, there's a reason why Alive is the one they make films out of.
Yeah, I mean, how would you? You wouldn't even believe this if this was made into a film.
I think if you made a film of it, you'd have to calm it down a bit,
wouldn't you?
Jesus Christ.
In retrospect, I'd have stayed in Illinois.
I think Illinois is fine. And I tell you what, you've got blues music to look forward to. Do you know what I mean? It's lovely now. Sears Tower. What a great place to live.
Yeah.
I'd love to live in Chicago. So that was the end of the Donner Party episode of Crash Bang Wallop.
Yes.
What are we doing next week?
Next time we are doing the Hoover Free Flights fiasco.
From cannibalism to vacuum cleaners. That is the podcast that you're listening to. If people want to follow us, talk to us, shout at us, say anything to us, really, you can contact us on Facebook.
Just search Crash Bang Wallop on Facebook. We come straight up.
Twitter, we're at CB Wallop Podcast. And if you give us a review on iTunes, lots of people are giving us lovely reviews on iTunes.
Yes, we're very lucky. We're very grateful. We're genuinely very grateful.
Dan Fardell gave us a nice review on iTunes. Thank you very much, Dan, for getting in touch. And yes, if you give us a review, that would be bloody marvellous. Phil, anything else to add?
Nothing at all, Phil.
Fantastic.
I wish to go to toilet now.
Me too, man. I really need a wee. So thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time with the Hoover Free Flights fiasco. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.